Revenue Super Tools. Actually, this is the best way to start this discussing about Acharyas. We talk about the present Acharyas, and then we get to see those Acharyas. So, Revenue Super Tools is from Switzerland. He is also a spiritual master of a movement in Switzerland, and Ravi Sutta Prabhu is one of the most dedicated book distributors in our movement. Actually, Ravi Sutta Prabhu in 1976 distributed. He was the best, biggest distributor, and was it 76 or 77? 76. And as a prize to best book distributor, he was offered a prize to come to the Mayapur festival, but he preferred to stay in Switzerland and carry on distributing books because he thought that that would be the best way to please Srila Prabhupada. And during the month, oh, that time you were in Germany. So that, and Prabhupada asked who was the biggest book distributor, and Prabhupada was told about Ravi Sutta Prabhu. And then Prabhupada wanted to see him. He asked, where is he? I wanted to see him. And then Prabhupada was told that Ravi Sutta Prabhu decided, rather preferred, to stay in Germany and carry on distributing books instead of coming to Mayapur. And Prabhupada was so pleased with this dedication of Ravi Sutta Prabhu that he blessed him with a very, very special mercy. And he is carrying on distributing books with absolute determination and dedication. So Ravi Sutta Prabhu ki. Prabhupada Sankirtan book distribution ki. So there is Gunadrahi Maharaj. Gunadrahi Maharaj is also another very, very elevated devotee. He is dedicated to preach all over America. Gunadrahi Maharaj travels around and preaches, cultivating people and inspiring them to take to Krishna consciousness, take the shelter of Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And I have seen that although Gunadrahi Maharaj's health was not very good last few years, but still with very, very sincere determination, he kept on traveling around America and cultivating people. And I have seen that many, many families, those who did not have any possibility actually of becoming Krishna conscious, due to Gunadrahi Maharaj's preaching, they have become full-time devotees. In remote corners of America, Gunadrahi Maharaj's preaching, Prabhupada's mercy, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. And this year we are very fortunate that Gunadrahi Maharaj came to Mayapur. Last couple of years he couldn't come and he missed his association very much. Gunadrahi Maharaj ki. Another very advanced devotee is Mahatma Prabhu. Mahatma Prabhu is also from America. Especially in the West Coast, Mahatma Prabhu's contribution is unforgettable. He had been distributing, preaching, inspiring devotees for many, many years. And now Mahatma Prabhu has decided to give his time to Mauritius and also to South Africa. And actually it was a big struggle for to get him to come to Mauritius because the American leaders just refused to let Mahatma Prabhu go because he's such a valuable devotee, such a valuable leader. And that finally they realized that Mauritius is a very important project and Mahatma Prabhu's input is absolutely essential. So finally, the leaders of West Coast, especially Badri Narayan Prabhu, who is the GBC there, agreed to let Mahatma Prabhu give his time to Mauritius, and I think Mahatma Prabhu will also give his time to South Africa. Mahatma Prabhu ki! Actually, I know it is embarrassing to hear one's own glorification, but this is a part of our Vaishnava culture. One for the person who is being glorified, he may feel embarrassed, but at the expense of his embarrassment and others experience the transcendental bliss.
With a profound
impression, or rather made a very, very profound impression in every individual who ever came in contact with Srila Prabhupada. And so, when I want to speak about Srila Prabhupada, although I know that there is so much to be repeated from Srila Prabhupada's book, but devotees always relish newer and newer experiences. And I personally do not feel any tiredness or boredom in describing Srila Prabhupada's pastime. So I have seen, I was very fortunate to come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, and be with him for a certain length of time. And though short, although rather short, 10 months that I spent with Srila Prabhupada, the impression is very, very vivid in my memory. And actually, I came quite late to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. I joined in 76, and I met Srila Prabhupada actually in 77. Although I moved into the temple, but Prabhupada was not here. And Prabhupada was in America at that time. So I had to wait for a few months before he came. I joined in Mayapur, here in Mayapur. Those days Mayapur was quite different. Like, we had the lotus building. The temple used to be on the ground floor of the lotus building. And we had only those rooms in the wall. And this building, the long building, were not there. Just we had one big building, the middle one, and the temple was at the ground floor. And for our living, we had only those rooms in the wall. And one day I came to visit Mayapur. Actually, I read Srila Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion. I was very fortunate to come across that book. And as I started reading that book, I resolved in my mind that I would join this movement. Actually, I got the book, I went home, started reading, and from the very first page, I felt that this is what I was actually looking for. And I couldn't stop reading that book till I fell asleep. And then the next morning when I woke up, I started to read it again. And in a way, in 2 days, I finished reading Nectar of Devotion. I just couldn't stop reading, while reading, I made up my mind that I would join this movement. So I went to Calcutta Temple, and I inquired about Srila Prabhupada, where he was, and I was told that Prabhupada was in America at that time. So I thought I would wait till Srila Prabhupada came to India, and then when he came here, then I would surrender myself to his lotus, at his lotus feet. And so thinking that, I decided that I would travel to the places where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastime. And thinking that, I came to Mayapur, Mahaprabhu's birthplace. I arrived here in the evening when the arati was going on, and Then I went to the Bhagavad Gita class, and everything was so wonderful. Everything, that time I did not actually know what transcendental actually meant, what divine actually meant. I didn't have any concept of those ideas, or I didn't have any concept about those conceptions. But I remember that I had a very profound feeling of serenity all around. Everything was so peaceful, and it seemed that this is the most beautiful place in this world, and I felt that the devotees are the most wonderful people in this world. And while I was reading, while I was attending the Bhagavatam class, Bhagavad Gita class, actually the class was, that day was given by Bhakti Raghav Maharaj. I'm sure many of you know him. So he was giving the class, and I was, all throughout the class, I had a feeling that he was actually speaking to me. Like every word that he was saying was addressed to me. He was actually talking about what is the use of wasting one's time in a material platform, you know, pursuing all the material goals. Actually, one should surrender to Krishna and experience the real happiness in life. And then he started to describe the glory of Mayapur Dham. And it was so wonderfully presented that I was very, very impressed. Not only impressed, I was very moved. And then after the class, some devotees spoke to me. Unfortunately, those devotees are not in this movement anymore. There are two brothers. One was Tarisevana Prabhu. He was from, he was from Southern America, South. Not South America, but southern part of America. His brother, Venkata Prabhu. And both of them were very friendly, very inviting. And then the next morning, I spoke to some other devotees. Especially I spoke to Shatadanna Prabhu. In the meantime, the word got around that boy came. At those days, not so many visitors used to come to Mayapur. So whenever somebody came, it was devotees had a lot of time for them and a lot of concern for them. I noticed many devotees, actually everybody got to know that I was there, and some of the felt that I was quite receptive. So many devotees came and spoke to me and invited me, why don't you come and stay here, why don't you be with us and try it out. Then then after the class, Bhagavatam class, Shatadanna Prabhu spoke to me. So after I spoke to all these devotees, I resolved in my mind, like already I decided that I would join this movement. And now that they're inviting me so affectionately, so why do not I respond? Why do not I join? So I just went to the barber and shaved my head. I went to the Ganges, took a bath, and threw away my old clothes and put on dhoti and kurta. I just joined up. And then I remember there was one devotee called Pandu. He's a painter. He's another American devotee. Unfortunately, he is also not with his son anymore. He lives in Mayapur, actually. He lives by the bank of the Jalangi River. Anyway, so Pandu Prabhu, he just made a comment. He said that it seems that you had always been here. You are not a new devotee. You had been with us for a long time. And we became very friendly. Those days, there are a lot of Western devotees here. Unfortunately, nowadays there are not so many Western devotees in Mayapur. Of course, now because of the festival, there are. But otherwise, there are only a handful of Western devotees. But those days, there are actually only a very few Indian devotees, and most of the devotees were from other countries of the world. And so this all those devotees were very friendly, very concerned. Out of them, I very vividly remember one devotee. His name is Tirthapad Das. Was Tirthapad Das. I actually was staying in the same room with him. And he was virtually taking care of me like his own brother. He was very concerned, very affectionate, and at the same time very strict. I used to have trouble getting up early, because before I came to this movement, at home it's the case with everybody, that we used to get up late, go to bed late, get up late, and it was my biggest problem was actually to get up in the morning, 3:30, and so much in the mode of ignorance. And Tirthapad Prabhu was so nice that he would literally drag me out of my bed. Like he would try to wake me up, but if he saw that I did not wake up, I was still lazing around and completely submerged in the mode of ignorance. So he would grab me by my hand, and he would start to pull me out of the bed, and finally I had to get up. And those days we didn't have any proper bathroom and toilet. The toilet was some holes in the ground and covered on three sides, three sides by some gunny bags, like the jute cloth, and one side was another gunny, just a jute cloth, jute cloth used to be hanged, and that used to serve as the door, and we had to use the toilet. And in the morning, everything was completely dark, and as you all know, that Mayapur has a lot of snakes. They're not just some ordinary snakes, mostly they're cobras. and that was monsoon time, so the field used to be all wet, and in dark we had to go to the toilet, and they take bath in some, there used to be some hand pumps, and you just use the hand pump and take your bath there. And anyway, it was quite exciting, but at the same time, it was very austere. I think the greatest austerity for me those days was to get up in the morning and then do my morning rituals. But the rest of the day used to be very, very very ecstatic, very joyful. So, before I met Prabhupada, I got I became a part of ISKCON much involved in ISKCON right from the very beginning. And after a few months, when Srila Prabhupada came to India, Prabhupada actually first came to Bombay, and I got the news that Prabhupada came. So I wanted to go to see Srila Prabhupada, but I was told by the authorities here that it would be better not to go to see Srila Prabhupada in Bombay, rather wait for Srila Prabhupada to come to Mayapur, and it will be better then, because then I can have a more access to Srila Prabhupada. Whereas in Bombay, I'll be just another a face in the crowd. And at that time, Prabhupada was quite sick, so devotees were restricted to seeing Srila Prabhupada. And I also was so much involved in so many different activities in Mayapur that I could not go. I couldn't disentangle myself. Then came Kumbh Mela, and Prabhupada went to Kumbh Mela in Allahabad, and the devotees from Mayapur went to Kumbh Mela to participate in the festival and also to meet Srila Prabhupada. And I was included in that party. So we drove in a bus. It took 2 days to drive to Allahabad. And when we arrived in Kumbh Mela, it was around noontime. And we got to know that Srila Prabhupada arrived the day before, and Prabhupada was giving darshan in the evening and morning. So I thought that I would wait till evening when Srila Prabhupada gave darshan. And so I was just loitering around in the area. We had a big area where we pitched many tents for the accommodation of the devotees. And there was a big tent for Srila Prabhupada, which was surrounded by walls by corrugated tin sheets. And one devotee was guarding Srila Prabhupada's door. And so I knew that I won't be able to see Srila Prabhupada there at that time. So the only time I could see Srila Prabhupada would be only in the evening. And anyone who actually joined this movement when Srila Prabhupada was here knows how exciting it was to see Srila Prabhupada. Like, Prabhupada's darshan was something very, very rare and very wonderful and very divine. And literally it was. Like, I never seen Srila Prabhupada before, except in some dreams. I saw Prabhupada in dreams, and those dreams were very real. So I had some feeling that how it would be like to see Srila Prabhupada face to face. But I would say that I did not actually have any awareness or understanding how it would be like to see Srila Prabhupada. So at that time, Bhavananda Prabhu, who was a co-director of Mayapur at that time, he was going to see Srila Prabhupada with a basket of vegetables that he was carrying from Mayapur to offer to Srila Prabhupada. The vegetables that he grew in Mayapur. So I immediately ran behind him and we went into Srila Prabhupada's tent. I didn't go in, he walked
straight in. And I offered a basin system outside. And when I got up, when I saw that Srila Prabhupada was inside the tent, he was sitting behind his desk. And he was actually looking at me. And so I was about to go into Srila Prabhupada's tent. And at that time, Rameshwar Prabhu was Prabhupada's secretary. So he stopped me. So he was standing outside Prabhupada's tent. And he said that Prabhupada is taking prasad, so don't go now. So I just took the message and got the message and I walked away. So that's how I first met Srila Prabhupada. I saw him from outside when he was sitting inside the tent. And that scene was not because the inside the tent was quite dark and I couldn't see Prabhupada so well, but I could see that he was sitting there behind the desk and he was looking at me when I stood up after offering my obeisances to him. And that evening when Prabhupada was giving his darshan, I don't know what happened. I was a little late. Maybe I didn't get the time right. So Prabhupada already started giving darshan and I walked in to Prabhupada's tent, but the tent was really practically jam-packed. And somehow I squeezed myself in between the last person and the wall of the tent. And I was not aware of what was going on there. I saw Prabhupada was sitting there and the tent was completely full, but I was not hearing anything. All I could hear is my heart beating very loudly. All I could hear is my heartbeat. And it took me some time before I became aware of my surroundings. And then I saw, started to register what Srila Prabhupada was saying and what the others were asking. Actually, a lot of people, many of them were outsiders, visitors. Kumbh Mela is a festival, a spiritual festival in India, where literally millions of people come. Like last Kumbh Mela, 12 million people participated in that. That is, the whole place becomes a city. It takes place in Prayag, which is a confluence of three rivers, Ganga, Jamuna and Saraswati. And in the confluence of these two rivers, for miles after miles, they teach him, and a township is established where millions of people come. And that was a special Kumbh Mela that takes place once in every 144 years. Like every 4 years there is a Kumbh Mela. But the full Kumbh takes place in every 12 years. Like Kumbh means a pot. Like it fills up first 4 years is one third, then the second one is two thirds, and the 12th year is the full Kumbh. So every 12 years there is a Purna Kumbh, and then every 12 multiplied by 12 there is a special Purna Kumbh. That means in every 144 years that time comes. And in 1977 was that Kumbh Mela. And Prabhupada is there, and millions of people came. So these people came to Srila Prabhupada, and they're asking various questions. I remember there were many very important people also were there, like movie stars and ministers. And so they were asking questions, and Prabhupada were answering their questions very wonderfully. And to me at that time, Prabhupada appeared to be like a Maharathi, as if those people are shooting the questions to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was defeating their questions very easily. Because so often these questions are very, very, what should I say, very, very pointed. And Prabhupada was good. And to give you an example, one question I remember, like one man asked Prabhupada in a rather challenging way, why are you making all these new temples when there are so many old temples needing renovation and care? When there are so many old Krishna temples needing renovation and care? Then Prabhupada didn't answer the question directly. Prabhupada asked him, who is that lady sitting next to you? So that man said, well, she's my wife. Then Prabhupada asked him, why did you get married? So that man didn't have any answer. So Prabhupada said, you got married because you want to have children. One gets married in order to produce children. Now, why produce children when there are so many children loitering in the streets? So by that, Prabhupada answered his question. But just as you want to have your own child, you are not satisfied just by picking up one child from the street. Similarly, devotees want to build temples for Krishna. And also another devotee, another person, he was a kind of a sadhu from another religious group. Their principle is to do good to others. They say that serving man is serving God. You serve God by serving human beings. So this man asked Srila Prabhupada what he was doing for mankind, and how he was helping the suffering human being. And Prabhupada became very heavy with him. He just kept on smashing him in a very strong way. So Prabhupada, this man was asking Prabhupada in Bengali, asking Prabhupada's questions in Bengali, that Prabhupada was answering the questions in Hindi. So at one point, this man asked him, I'm asking you in Bengali, why are you answering in Hindi? And Prabhupada said, Bengali or Hindi, it doesn't matter. And the question is whether you understand what I'm talking about. And I could realize that Prabhupada was actually speaking in Hindi so that everybody else could understand, because in Allahabad is in northern part of India, where most of the people are Hindi speaking, and the people who are present in the tent, most of them were actually Hindi speaking. So Prabhupada was answering him in Hindi, and Prabhupada was very heavy, very heavy. And I was thinking that that had Prabhupada not been so heavy, probably this boy would have been able to accept it more easily. And I was thinking that now that Prabhupada is being so heavy, this man who actually could become a devotee will not become a devotee. And strangely enough, after some months, after about a year, year and a half, after Srila Prabhupada left this planet, I met the same man here in Mayapur. And he joined, but unfortunately he couldn't join at that time. Prabhupada was actually telling him that the real way to help mankind, the best way to benefit people, is by helping them understand Krishna consciousness, giving them food, clothes and shelter is not the real help. Real benefit is rendered by offering them Krishna consciousness. And so this is how Prabhupada was preaching. Prabhupada was preaching in a very wonderful way. And then I remember the next day Prabhupada was giving class, that we are having a Guru Puja. There were about 250 devotees and we are having a wonderful kirtan, a roaring kirtan during Prabhupada's Guru Puja. And that, at that time, the devotee who was leading, he was leading a very ecstatic kirtan. And all of a sudden he started to sing. Bhajo Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. And Prabhupada just stopped the kirtan and he started to shout at him. He said, "Where did you learn this Bhajo Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna?" And Prabhupada, when he used to get angry, when Prabhupada used to chastise someone, Prabhupada used to become like a lion. Prabhupada had a very, very powerful voice. Although at that time Prabhupada was 81 years old, but his voice was unbelievably strong. And Prabhupada started to shout at him, "Where did you learn Bhajo Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna? Did you ever hear me sing that thing? Did I ever ask you to sing Bhajo Hare Krishna?" And then Prabhupada said that this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra should be chanted just as it is. So nothing should be added to it and nothing should be subtracted from it. So, and then Prabhupada gave a class and the devotees were very, very happy to have the darshan of Srila Prabhupada. And although Kumbh Mela is a spiritual festival, but it became nowadays due to the influence of the westernization or industrialization. Indian atmosphere also has become very polluted and there are many tea stalls and restaurants and they used to play blaring loudspeakers, singing all kinds of mundane songs, and it used to disturb Prabhupada very much at night. Prabhupada used to translate, but because of his loudspeakers, he could not translate Srimad Bhagavatam. Besides that, his health was not very good. And at that time, in January, Kumbh Mela was very cold. It's unbelievably cold. Actually, Indian cold is much worse than Western cold. In the West, you have central heating and harvest facilities. But in India, you have to just wait for the sun to come up. And unless the sun comes up, there is no way you can see to yourself, efficient like a fire, etc. So Prabhupada was also, Prabhupada did not like coal. Prabhupada used to say that coal is hellish. He didn't mind heat so much, but Prabhupada couldn't stand the cold. And so then one morning, Prabhupada decided to go to Calcutta, leave Kumbh Mela and go to Calcutta, and the arrangement was made. Is this my water? Arrangement was made for Prabhupada to come to Calcutta. Those days Prabhupada's health was not very good, so Prabhupada didn't want to fly. Instead, Prabhupada decided to take a train. So one whole carriage was reserved for Srila Prabhupada. A special carriage was arranged for Srila Prabhupada. And some devotees accompanied Srila Prabhupada. 14 devotees actually, 14 sannyasis and GBC accompanied Srila Prabhupada. And fortunately, I was also included in that group. And so the train started at night, and Prabhupada was, soon after the train started, Prabhupada took rest, and we all took rest. After taking a bath, I was chanting japa, and around 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, Bhavananda Prabhu came to me and said, "Come, I'll take you to Srila Prabhupada." And Prabhupada was just two compartments away from mine. Like, this first class carriages have different compartments, and each compartment has the arrangement for four people to sit. So I was, at that time, I felt completely unqualified to go in front of Srila Prabhupada. And Bhavananda Prabhu could read my mind, or feel, understand how I was feeling. So although he was asking me to come to see Srila Prabhupada, I didn't stand up, I just kept sitting silently. A lot of things were going on in my mind. I was thinking, how can I go to Srila Prabhupada? Prabhupada will see me through, and Prabhupada will, in from such close proximity, Prabhupada will understand all the dirt that I have in my heart. And so I was feeling totally unqualified. And so he just grabbed me by my hand. He grabbed my hand and dragged me through the corridor and opened Srila Prabhupada's door to Prabhupada's compartment, and he just pushed me in, and I just fell flat offering my dandavat. And it was a long obeisance that I offered. All the mantras I knew about glorifying the spiritual master. And then when I got up, I saw that Prabhupada was looking at me very intently, and he asked me to sit next to him. But as I mentioned, this compartment has two seats facing each other, meant for two in each seat. So in one seat Srila Prabhupada was sitting, and the one facing Srila Prabhupada's seat, there were Rameshwar Maharaj, Jayaprakash Maharaj, and Bhavananda Prabhu. And Abhiram Prabhu was sitting on his floor. So when the Prabhupada asked me to sit next to him, so I said, no, brother, I'll sit on the floor. So Prabhupada said, no, you can sit here. And there was a asana, there was a blanket spread on Srila Prabhupada's feet. So I rolled that. However, Prabhupada insisted that I sit there. So I rolled that asana, the corner of the asana, and I sat there. And then Prabhupada started asking me what I was doing, etc. And then he gave me his first instruction. He asked me to translate his books into Bengali. And he told me, so do you translate my books into Bengali? So I said, Prabhupada, I don't know how to translate your books. So doesn't matter. You keep trying. He said, practice makes the man perfect. And he used a Bengali expression. He said, by dancing one becomes a dancer, and by singing one becomes a singer. So you just keep translating and you will be perfect. And then right soon after that, I remember Prabhupada started to blast Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. Before I came in contact with Srila Prabhupada's book, I was very much impressed by Vivekananda. And Ramakrishna also to some extent, but Vivekananda I was very much impressed. I read all his work and I was very much influenced by that also. And here Prabhupada practically for no rhyme or reason, Prabhupada started to just blast Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. Ramakrishna was just a rascal. And Vivekananda was a fool number one. So from that I could understand that Prabhupada could see all the unanswers I had in my heart. And Prabhupada, right from the first meeting, Prabhupada started to uproot all those unanswers. And when Prabhupada said that, it was just clear in my mind, clear in my heart, that yes, Prabhupada said that Ramakrishna is a rascal, so he is a rascal. Vivekananda is a fool number one, so he is a fool number one. And it was so easy, so clear in my mind. So then we arrived in Calcutta, and Prabhupada stayed there for 3 days. And I was so so happy because I was so close to Srila Prabhupada. Because Calcutta Temple, I don't know whether you all have the experience of Calcutta Temple. Calcutta Temple is very small and the facilities are not very nice. At least now it is nicer. Those days there's hardly any facilities. At least if there's no facility, there's shortage of facilities now. Those days there was no facility at all. And Prabhupada had this room, and we all used to sleep in the veranda actually. And Prabhupada was giving darshan every evening. A lot of people were coming, Thank you very much, and one evening, Prabhupada gave the darshan, and when the Ayurvedic started, so Prabhupada told everyone to go to the Ayurvedic. And so we all left Prabhupada's room and we went to Ayurvedic. But then I thought that I can attend Ayurvedic every day, but Prabhupada will not be here every day, so let me go and be with Srila Prabhupada. So I just went back to Srila Prabhupada's room. And when we went there, I saw Prabhupada was counting money. Like all the offerings, when people come to see a sadhu in India, they give donation. So Prabhupada was very intently counting donation. And it was a little shocking to me, like I couldn't actually picture Srila Prabhupada counting money. Well, I had some misconception about a sadhu or a devotee due to Mayavadi influence. So Prabhupada asked me, so what happened? So I said, Prabhupada, I thought that I would rather come and be with you instead of attending the Ayurveda. So Prabhupada said, okay, sit down. So, and Prabhupada kept on counting. So he finished counting the money, and then he kept the money very carefully stacked up in his drawer. So then he asked me, so, what do you want? So I thought that was a very nice opportunity to ask Srila Prabhupada whether he would give me initiation, because I had the fear that if Prabhupada refuses to initiate me, then what will happen? Because I was told that there are devotees who have been waiting for 5-6 years, not 5-6 years, 3-4 years, and still haven't got initiation. So in a trembling heart, I asked Srila Prabhupada whether he would give me initiation. So Prabhupada said, yes, sure, he will give me initiation. Wait till Mayapur festival, Gaudama festival, I'll give you initiation at that time. So I was so happy that Prabhupada gave me the assurance that he would give me initiation. And then from Calcutta, Prabhupada went to Bhuvaneshwar for about 10 days, 2 weeks, more or less about 2 weeks. I could have gone with Srila Prabhupada to Bhuvaneshwar if I wanted. But at that time I was printing a book. I collected Prabhupada's writing from old journals, old Gaudiya Math magazines, and I compiled them together and I was printing them in a book. So I decided to stay back and complete the book and then present it to Prabhupada when he came back. So Prabhupada, finally Prabhupada came back from Bhuvaneshwar. He came to Mayapur, and it was one of the most ecstatic experiences I had. It was soon before Mayapur festival, so there were hundreds of devotees in Mayapur, and Prabhupada just arrived, and Prabhupada actually walked. The devotees, hundreds of devotees actually greeted Srila Prabhupada, and with a massive kirtan, and there were rows of hundreds of devotees standing in rows were on the way from the gate to this building.
And he started to chant and dance, and then all the drunkards became ecstatic seeing this Nityananda Prabhu like that, and they became his followers. So, Nityananda Prabhu, when he was informed that Raghunath Das Goswami arrived and offering obeisances from a distance, So Nityananda Prabhu said, oh, so finally the thief has come. So bring that thief to me. So Raghunath Das Goswami was very humble and he didn't want to go close to Nityananda Prabhu. So Nityananda Prabhu ordered his followers to get hold of him and bring him to Nityananda Prabhu. So they went and grabbed Raghunath Das Goswami's arm and pulled him to Nityananda Prabhu. And when he came to Nityananda Prabhu, he offered obeisance to him. And Nityananda Prabhu very mercifully placed his lotus feet at his head, and thus he accepted him. And then he told him that, sir, I caught the thief finally. So now you have to pay. You have to suffer the consequences of your crime. That you have been running away from me for so long, and for that you have to accept some punishment. So I will give you some punishment. And the punishment is that you have to feed me and all my associates with cheap rice and yogurt. So Raghunath Das Goswami was very happy. So he immediately made arrangements and to get cheap rice, yogurt, and condensed milk, and various kinds of fruits and sweets. So there was a huge feast. So Nityananda Prabhu sat there under a banyan tree, surrounded by his innumerable associates, and the news spread that there was a huge feast on the bank of the Ganges, organized by Raghunath Das Goswami. So whoever heard also came. So there were so many people that the whole land became filled up. So then people went to Ganges. The half of Ganges became filled up. So they sat there standing in the water and eating the chip rice and yogurt and the festival. We participate in that festival every year, and we organize it in a very grand way, serving them chip rice, yogurt, condensed milk, mixed with mango pulp and banana and sweet. And that way we feed about 30 to 40,000 people every year. So we start distributing prasad around 11 o'clock and the distribution goes on till about 5 o'clock. And constantly 6 or 7 people give their handful of chip rice and condensed milk and chip rice mixed with condensed milk and yogurt. So so then this is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Raghunath Das Goswami received Nityananda Prabhu's mercy. Then Raghunath Das Goswami went back home, and after meeting Nityananda Prabhu, he became completely disgusted with all his family attachments. And so he started to plan how to run away. So one day, he ran away. Like one day Jagannathan Acharya came and told him that his pujari ran away. So Raghunath Das Goswami took that opportunity and said, okay, so I will go and get him. You don't worry, you go back home, I will get the pujari. And Raghunath Das Goswami was guarded by about 10 people constant. There were 6 guards and 4 brahmanas, always surrounding him so that he couldn't run away. So Raghunath Das Goswami told, actually he went with Jagannathan Acharya. So everyone thought he's safe. Now Jagannathan Acharya is with him. So after a while, he told Jagannathan Acharya that you are an old man. Why will you walk such a distance? You better go back home. So I'll go and get the pujari. So Jagannathan Acharya said, okay, so you do that. And Raghunath Das Goswami took this opportunity and he just ran. And he didn't take the main road.
he took the country road and ran through the small country road, and sometimes he had to run through the villages, forest. And this way, practically, without any food and without any rest, he arrived in Jagannath Puri. So in the meantime, the next morning, that night, the guards became very worried when Raghunath Das Goswami didn't come back. So they informed his father. So his father was very, very upset. So immediately, soldiers were sent on horseback to get Raghunath. So they took the main road, and on the way, at that time, the Gauriya Vaishnavas were going to Jagannath Puri, led by Sivananda Sen. Every year, Sivananda Sen used to lead the Vaishnavas from Bengal to Jagannath Puri, and there they used to stay with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for 4 months, and after 4 months they used to come back to Bengal. So Sivananda Sen also was a friend of Raghunath Das Goswami's father. So his father's messengers met Sivananda Sen and asked him whether Raghunath Das Goswami came, Raghunath Das Goswami was in his party, was traveling with him. So Sivananda Sen wrote a letter to his father saying that Raghunath didn't come. So in the meantime, Raghunath Das Goswami arrived in Jagannath Puri and he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very happy that Raghunath Das Goswami came to him, and this time he accepted him. Now there is an understanding that when Raghunath Das Goswami approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected him. But this time, because he approached Nityananda Prabhu and Nityananda Prabhu accepted him, that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted. So this shows that one cannot directly approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One must approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through Nityananda Prabhu. And who is Nityananda Prabhu? Nityananda Prabhu is the original spiritual master. So one must approach Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through the spiritual master, the representative of Nityananda. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased, and Govinda gave Raghunath Das Goswami Mahaprabhu's remnants. And then Mahaprabhu called Sarup Damodar Goswami and entrusted Raghunath Das Goswami to Sarup Damodar Goswami. So Sarup Damodar, you take care of Raghunath. And since then, Raghunath Das Goswami became known as Sarupeda Raghunath, or Raghunath of Sarup Damodar. Sarup Damodar's Raghunath. So in a way, Raghunath Das Goswami became the disciple of Sarup Damodar Goswami. And who is Sarup Damodar Goswami? In Vrindavan pastime of Krishna? Who is Sarvajamana? Lalita Shri Lalita Devi. And Raghunath Das Goswami is a manjari called Raga Manjari. And so originally Raghunath Das Goswami or Raga Manjari belongs to Lalita Devi, and that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entrusted him to Sarup Damodar Goswami. So Sarup Damodar Goswami was taking care of Raghunath, and so in the meantime, Raghunath Das Goswami's mother became very upset. She told his father that this time when you catch him, you just tie him down with a chain. So his father told her, see, the opulence of Indra and the wife as beautiful as an Apsara could not tie him down. So do you think just a mere chain, or with a mere chain you can tie him down? He says that those who develop attachment and mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu those who develop attachment to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu due to his causeless mercy, nothing can tie him down to this world anymore. So he said, since he has gone, we have tried time and time again to keep him at home, but it is not possible. We have seen that it's not possible to tie him down, so now that he has gone to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, let him stay there. Let him stay there happily. So he sent four servants, and he was sending 400 rupees every month. And with that money, and with the help of the servants, Raghunandan Das Goswami started to organize this feast in Jagannath Puri. And he used to invite Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. So, then after a while, Raghunandan Das Goswami thought that I have accepted the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I have become totally surrendered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why should I take money from my father? So he sent the servants back and he stopped taking money from his father. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Sarup Damodar, Sarup, how come Raghunath does not invite us to feast anymore? So Sarup Damodar said that Raghunath stopped taking the money from his father and he sent the servants away, servants back home. Now that he doesn't have any money, he can't organize the feast. So Mahaprabhu asked, that's very good, but how does he maintain himself? So Sarup Damodar said that he stands in front of the main gate of Jagannath temple, and when the pujaris go back after the, go home from the temple, they give him some prasad, Jagannath prasad, and accepting that prasad, Raghunath is maintaining himself. So Mahaprabhu was very happy. So that's very good. Then after a while, Mahaprabhu asked Sarup Damodar again, Sarup, how come I don't see Raghunath in front of Simhadwar anymore? So Sarup Damodar said, Raghunath actually stopped begging Mahaprasad from the pujari. That's why he doesn't stand in front of the Simhadwar. So Mahaprabhu asked him, how does he maintain himself? And Sarup Damodar told him that he goes from shop to shop and he begs. And by doing that, he is maintaining himself. So Mahaprabhu was very pleased. He said, that's very good. He said, after all, standing in front of the Simhadwar, waiting for the pujaris to give him some prasad is like a prostitute. Just like a prostitute feels that here is a man, most surely he is coming to me, and then the man goes away and he thinks, oh, she thinks, oh, maybe the next one will come. So this was not a very good way of maintaining himself. So it is better that he is begging like that from shop to shop. So then after a while, Mahaprabhu asked Sarup Damodar, how come I don't see Raghunath anymore? Then he said that Raghunath even stopped begging from shop to shop. So Mahaprabhu asked, how does he maintain himself? Then he said, he actually goes to where the prasadam is distributed to the beggars, he sits with them and he accept the prasad from the Kshatriya. So Mahaprabhu was very happy, very pleased that Raghunath is becoming so renowned. And then after a while, Mahaprabhu asked Sarup Damodar, how is Raghunath? And then Sarup Damodar replied that Raghunath didn't even take the prasadam from the Kshatriya or food distribution center, prasad distribution center. So Mahaprabhu asked, how does he maintain himself then? His grandchild down the said that Raghunath picks up the rotten prasad that is thrown away in the drain at the back of the temple, and the prasad that even the animals like cows and goats will not eat, Raghunath takes up that prasad from the drain and he washes them and takes out the good part, and he is just taking back. So Mahaprabhu became very, very happy. So he immediately ran to Raghunath Das Goswami's cottage. And at that time, and he went and asked Raghunath, "So Raghunath, you are having all the nectar depriving us. Now what kind of a person you are?" So Raghunath was very embarrassed. He said, "No, Mahaprabhu, I'm not taking the nectar." So he said, "Now you're also trying to deceive me, huh?" And saying that, Mahaprabhu reached for the pot of prasad that was kept under the bed, and Mahaprabhu pulled that, picked that up, and started to eat that prasad. And Raghunath tried to stop. He said, no, this is not for you to take. Please don't eat that." And Mahaprabhu started to dance in ecstasy, taking that prasad. And he embraced Raghunath. And this is how, through Raghunath Das Goswami, Mahaprabhu established the science of renunciation. So different associates, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established different aspects of devotional service. Now the renunciation aspect has been exemplified through Raghunath Das Goswami. He was the son of a king, born in one of the most opulent families of that time. But gradually as he developed Mahaprabhu's mercy, he became more and more detached from material attachment. So later on, when Raghunath Das Goswami was in Vrindavan, he used to take a leaf cup of buttermilk. A buttermilk in a leaf cup. You have seen leaf cup in Vrindavan. They serve prasad in leaf cup. He used to just take a buttermilk in a leaf cup once every 3 days. Regarding that also, there is a very nice story, a very nice incident. I'll tell you 2 incidences regarding that. Before that, let me tell you how Raghunath Das Goswami went to Vrindavan. So Raghunath Das Goswami was in Jagannath Puri, but when Mahaprabhu left this planet, Raghunath Das Goswami felt that it was useless to maintain his body. So he decided to give up his body, jumping from Govardhan Hill. So he went to Vrindavan thinking that he would, it's called Shila Patan, giving up one's body from jumping from a great height. But when he went to Vrindavan and met Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, he felt that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't leave. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, and he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. And Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami dissuaded him from committing suicide. And they told him that, "Raghunath, you have so many things to do. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted you to do so many things, and this is not the time to leave this planet. You are one of the few persons who had the good fortune of associating with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very intimately. And so we have been deprived of that good fortune. So now you must tell us about Mahaprabhu's pastime." So Raghunath Das Goswami, they used to narrate Mahaprabhu's pastime every evening, and all day Goswamis of Vrindavan used to sit around him and listen to Mahaprabhu's pastime. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami got a lot of information of his Chaitanya Charitamrita from Raghunath Das Goswami. That's why after every chapter, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami offered obeisances Sri Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami. And so Raghunath Das Goswami was in Vrindavan along with the other Goswami. And he used to take only, actually another nice, very nice story, very nice incident. Raghunath Das Goswami was so renowned that he did not make a cottage for himself or a hut for himself. He used to sit on the bank of the Radhakund under a tree and he used to chant day and night. So one day Sanatana Goswami came from some place and when he, Naruto Goswami came and he saw Raghunath was sitting under a tree and chanting. And at that time, a couple of tigers came to drink water from Radhakund. And the tigers just walked by him, went to the water, drank the water, and Raghunath Das Goswami did not have any awareness at all. He was so absorbed in chanting the holy name of Krishna that he didn't even notice that the tigers walked past him. And then the tigers drank water and then they went away. And Rupa Goswami saw that actually Radharani was protecting Raghunath Das Goswami. When Raghunath was absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then Radharani was standing beside him, guarding him. So Rupa Goswami then told Raghunath that Raghunath, you should build a hut for yourself. You are simply troubling Srimati Radharani. You are very renounced, you do not have any external consciousness, is very good. But you are simply harassing Srimati Radharani. Our business is not to take service from Srimati Radharani. Our business is to serve Radha Krishna. There is another such incident. One day Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami came to Rupa Goswami's house, Rupa Goswami's cottage. And Rupa Goswami thought that where Sanatana Goswami came, and if I could offer him some sweet rice, it would be so nice. If I could offer some sweet rice to Govinda, Radha Govinda, and then offer the remnants to Sanatana Goswami. So at that time, just as he thought, just as a desire, soon after that, one little girl came with milk, rice, and rock candy, all the ingredients for making sweet rice, and gave it to Rupa Goswami and said, my mother sent this to you, so you please accept this. So Rupa Goswami was very happy. He thought, nice, I got some rice and a very fragrant rice and milk and rock candy. So I'll make some sweet rice. So he made the sweet rice, offered it to Radha Govinda, and he then offered it to Sanatana Goswami. So when Sanatana Goswami was taking the sweet rice, he felt that this sweet rice was not from this world. That sweet rice was from the spiritual sky. So he asked Rupa Goswami where he got the sweet rice from. And Rupa Goswami told him what happened. And Sanatana Goswami got very annoyed. He said, "Look, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have desired like that. You know what happened? Radharani herself came to fulfill your desire. She brought this milk and rice and all the other ingredients. So never ever harass Radha, never ever bother Radharani with your selfish desire." So similarly here also, Rupa Goswami chastised Raghunath Das Goswami that fine, it's very nice that you are so renounced, but through your renunciation, you are simply troubling Srimati Radharani. Instead of comforting her, you are harassing. So then, since then, Raghunath Das Goswami accepted a hut. He built a hut, glass hut, and he stayed there. So that's one incident. Another very nice incident is one day, Raghunath Das Goswami, before that I'll tell you this incident also. Raghunath Das Goswami used to accept some buttermilk once every 3 days in a leaf cup. So Raghunath Das Goswami had a servant who used to serve him very faithfully. So this servant, one day he thought, he came across some big leaves. These leaf cups are made out of palash leaves. They grow about this way. From this leaf, the cup is made. But he came across some big palash leaves. So he thought that if he makes a leaf cup out of those big leaves, then that big cup will contain larger amount of buttermilk. So Raghunath Das Goswami will be forced to drink some more buttermilk. So he made that leaf cup and he took the buttermilk to Raghunath Das Goswami. So Raghunath Das Goswami asked him, where did you get such a big leaf? So he said he got the leaf from Shokhisthali. Now Shokhisthali is the group of Chandravali. So, and Chandravali is Radharani's enemy. So Radharani's followers cannot even stand to hear the name of Chandravali. They have such a wonderful loyalty to Srimati Radharani. Because Radharani, Dr. Vinod Thakur also wrote in one of his poems that I can't even tolerate the name of Chandravali and her followers. Because they try to steal Krishna of Srimati Radharani. So I don't want to see their face, nor do I want to hear their name. So as soon as Raghunath Das Goswami heard the name Shokhisthali, he just threw away the cup with the buttermilk and told him that you never ever go to that place. So, another one of the very wonderful incidents is, one day, Raghunath Das Goswami developed some stomach problem. So, two Ayurvedic doctors were called from Mathura. Actually, the news reached some big patron in Mathura. Those days, they had a big following, and because they naturally, although they were very renowned themselves, but people became attached to them. Many, many very wealthy and influential people became their disciples. So the news reached Mathura that Raghunath Das Goswami developed some stomach disorder. So immediately the doctors were sent. So the doctors checked the pulse. Usually the Ayurvedic doctors diagnose disease by filling the pulse. So they filled the patient's pulse and they diagnosed that he developed indigestion due to overeating. So everyone said, what? Raghunath Das Goswami overeating? he takes a cupful of buttermilk once in 3 days? I mean, where's the question of his overeating? So they started to laugh at the doctors. And then the doctors, they said, no, it is true. The diagnosis is that this is due to overeating. So then Raghunath Das Goswami admitted that the night before he participated in a feast in Golok Vrindavan. He took some excess amount of sweet rice and that's why he got indigestion. So this is how all these wonderful personalities perform their most wonderful pastimes on this planet, showering their mercy upon us. And we have a wonderful heritage. We belong to a spiritual family which is undoubtedly the most aristocratic spiritual family. We have a we have a line of ancestors, those who are undoubtedly the greatest personalities that this world has ever seen. So we must become proud of our good fortune that we are born due to our spiritual birth in a family like this, where we have personalities like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Acharya Prabhu, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, Sarup Damodar Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, Vrindavan Das Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Baladev Das Goswami, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Gaurkishor Das Babaji Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.
All glories to Sri Madhva Gauri, Brahma Madhva Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya. Gaur Premanande. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami Ki. So, does anybody have any questions? He distributed love of Krishna to Nityananda Prabhu. He established the scriptures through Rupa Goswami Sanatana Goswami. He discovered the lost places of pilgrimage, the lost places of Krishna's pastimes through Rupa Goswami Sanatana.